Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. Welcome back. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Chris Harrison, who is coming to this call from a sunny United Kingdom, unusual for both there and here to be experiencing such weather. But we're going to talk today about a paper that Chris and his colleagues have scheduled for publication in the July 2013 issue of Medical Education. It's entitled Web-Based Feedback After Summative Assessment, How Do Students Engage? And by way of introduction, I should let you know that Chris is a half-time general practitioner, half-time senior lecturer at Keele University, and in his spare time is working on a PhD in Maastricht. Chris, first of all, thank you for being on the podcast, and congratulations on having the energy to keep each of these, what I'm sure are full-time jobs, moving forward.
Thanks very much. Delighted to be with you, Kevin.
I was intrigued by your paper for a number of reasons, but one being because we constantly express concern in medical education about the difficulty that can come from unintentionally mixing up the formative aspects of assessment and the summative aspects of assessment. And your title alone, as I've already read, Web-Based Feedback After Summative Assessment, indicates that you are hoping to use these sorts of exercises to help students continue to develop. What sort of struggles have you had in that regard that led you down this path?
Absolutely. I mean, there's an awful lot of research about feedback in a formative assessment context, but virtually none about feedback after summative assessments. And the summative assessment field is all about focusing on minimal competence and reliability of assessments, which is all really good. But I was getting concerned that students were just aiming for a low bar of minimal competence, and they could pass an assessment overall, but still have, you know, some significant gaps. And that was a worry. And I would want students to be aiming for maximal competence or excellence, however you regard it. It's a bit like an airline pilot. You wouldn't want him to get through on a kind of minimal competence basis. You wouldn't feel very comfortable flying in his plane. So we wanted to see if students would engage with feedback in a summative concept, or were they just interested in passing.
Right. So you've mounted an OSCE. I understand that to be the summative context that we're talking about here. How high are the stakes for this particular exam in your context?
Well, it was the third year, and we have a five-year course at Keele, and this is their first big clinical year. They have some early clinical experience in the first 2 years, but the third year is where they spend a lot of time clinically, and they have to pass this exam along with some written assessments to be able to progress to the fourth year. So it is high stakes in that sense.
And is it an exam where you've historically given feedback to students, or is this a new endeavour altogether?
It was a new endeavour, really. Before that, students were just told really whether they'd passed or failed and how many stations they'd passed or failed. The feeling was you've got quite large numbers of students, and OSCEs are kind of busy environments, and well, the focus is on are they competent enough to pass and progress. But we wanted to see, well, can we give them more feedback and will it be useful?
Right. And so I've seen OSCEs where people go to that extreme of saying, no, absolutely no feedback, this is a summative tool, we're just interested in the measurement, and others where they actually build lifetime feedback into the discussion between the candidate and an examiner. This is the first I've seen where you've taken the information and created a web-based form for students to further explore their feedback. Can you give our listeners a sense of what sort of information you were able to make available to the trainees?
Yeah, we tried to give them a kind of a la carte menu on the website so they can look at it any way they want. They can either look at station-by-station information, and within that they can look at how close they were to the pass-fail mark, the cut score, or how close they were to the maximum mark available. They can also look at a breakdown in skills across the station, or the examiner's global assessment of them. And then they can see quite detailed comparative information of where they are in the cohort for that particular station compared to show a kind of histogram of the other students. We've also given them cross-station feedback, so they can look, say, how are they doing at clinical reasoning across the whole OSCE, or various communication aspects, which we think educationally would be, you know, a really useful message. And we just wanted to give them this menu and see what, if anything, would they be interested in. And the idea of having it on a website is that you can monitor how they use it and whether they go back to it, which is really useful to find out.
And so all very numeric. These weren't comments from the particular examiners that got embedded after the fact.
No, at that stage, we could just cope with numeric comments, really, and breakdowns, because at that stage, we felt it wasn't feasible to cope with comments as well, really, in the context of a busy OSCE.
Right, right. So you did have an incredible amount of information available to you through the website itself. Before we get into those sorts of details, I should ask you to explain to our listeners what additional information you asked from the participants by way of the questionnaires that you distributed.
Yeah, we knew from the other feedback literature that other factors, what we call learning-related characteristics, can influence feedback in other settings. So particularly things like as to whether someone's got a learning goal orientation, we know that they often see feedback as quite diagnostic and use it to improve their performance, whereas people who've got more of a performance goal orientation are more interested in demonstrating their competence and find it quite threatening if the feedback suggests otherwise. So we expected that people who had more of a learning goal orientation would make more use of the feedback. And we also thought people with intrinsic motivation would similarly make more use of it. And we looked at self-efficacy. So we thought, well, let's do a questionnaire a couple of weeks before the OSCE to assess where they're at in all these characteristics, because we thought they would have a significant impact on feedback.
And how long after the OSCE was it that the website was available for students to view?
It was just less than a couple of weeks, because the exam had to go through the kind of exam board procedures and verification checks. And then they got separately their overall marks, like the number of stations they'd passed, was sent out in the morning. And then in the afternoon, the feedback went live. We just sent one email out to all the students saying, if you want to look at it, the feedback's available.
Right, okay. The most basic finding from your results was in some ways one of the most impressive, in that the range of frequency with which people visited the site itself was massive, from 2 to 377 according to the abstract. And it's probably less surprising to people that there will be some who don't look at it at all, but that there were some who looked at it almost 400 times. It seems that there were many participants who really valued the information and pored over it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we were really pleased. About 96% of students actually viewed the website in some form, you know, at least once. And it was interesting to see, yeah, the majority of those viewed it from day one, but there was an interesting 4% who waited 2 weeks before looking at the feedback. And then we saw about half of them viewed the website more than once on each occasion. And as you say, massive range in how many pages they looked at, and also the kind of pages they looked at. Some were very interested in the station-by-station feedback, some looked more at the cross-station feedback, and it was a really interesting breakdown.
And from those various predictors that you were considering, were there types of students that you think to be more likely to use this information?
Well, it was a bit surprising, really. The learning-related characteristics didn't seem to predict website usage, with the exception of people who had higher extrinsic motivation used it less. And we'd put in a scale about the value of feedback, and people who scored higher on value and feedback, unsurprisingly, used it more. But otherwise, there was no clear relationship with goal orientation or self-efficacy and some of these other factors, which was surprising.
And either from your data or even just with any anecdotal conversations you've had with the students, are those who were lower performing and less likely to look at the pages, were they simply too overwhelmed by the negative information, or did they tend to justify not using the information in some other way?
I mean, that was the really interesting thing, was the effect that performance had on feedback. There was this U-shaped relationship between the OSCE score and the website usage. So the excellent students made most use of the feedback, and then the failing students made similar use of the feedback. But in a sense, the failing students had to, because they had a resit to contend with later in the year. You had to pass 8 out of 12 stations in this OSCE to go through to the next year, and those that just passed 8 or 9 stations made the least use of the feedback. And none of those visited the website more than twice, whereas there were some of the excellent students who were going five times on separate occasions back to the website. We're still trying to work out why that is, and we've commissioned some qualitative work to try and understand what's behind that, because obviously this was a quantitative study and doesn't really give us those kind of answers as to why. But that was a really interesting finding and doesn't seem to have been out there in the literature before.
Yeah, and it certainly seems to reinforce your concern going into this that some portion are treating these sorts of exercises as hurdles, and once they're over it, they're over it. They don't seem to be wondering about how to continue to improve their performance beyond that minimal threshold.
Absolutely, and it does flag up there is an issue, and maybe people should be obliged to engage with feedback. It's not just an opportunity for them, but there's maybe some kind of obligation to engage with the feedback to improve. But I think this section of just passing students are quite a vulnerable group, really. They're potentially vulnerable to future failure and could easily be forgotten about, because if a student fails, they're picked up and given extra support. There's been a lot of research on remediation and how to support that group. But if you just pass, then people leave you alone and don't really engage enough. And I think we need to find some way of finding the key to support them to aspire to higher levels.
Right. You've already mentioned some of the interesting research that would be worth following up on. So maybe I can make my final question. What you intend to do with this in terms of how the site's going to evolve and what you think would provide useful additions to the exercise to make it more valuable to students?
Yeah, well, we've subsequently developed the website, so we have now got comments available for the students. We now mark OSCEs on iPads, and in the gap between each student, the examiner talks into the iPad and creates an audio file, a minute to a minute and a half, and those are all then available for download by the students. So they're getting all those comments as well as the breakdown of the marks, which we think is potential improvement. We want to see whether these groups need definite coaching to help to scaffold them, you know, or whether we can do it with more online prompting to try to help them. Because it's a problem for many universities. There's huge numbers of students, and how can you help each one personally after each exam? It's quite a big ask for the faculty. So we want to see how much can you do online that will make that cost-effective and labour-effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a tremendous resource. I'm all aflutter just thinking about the countless research questions that you could address with that resource, and also just thinking about the increasing opportunities for the students to start taking advantage of some of the expertise that you have locally. So I'll look forward to seeing how this evolves and look forward to seeing your PhD come out the end of it.
That's great, Kevin. It's been really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. I'll just remind our listeners before signing off that I've been speaking with Chris Harrison, and we've been discussing a paper called Web-Based Feedback After Summative Assessment, How Do Students Engage? That's due to be published in the July 2013 issue of Medical Education. Thanks for joining me from Kiel, Chris. I'll look forward to touching base with you again.
Thanks very much.